Welcome back to Building People, where we're having edifying conversations about life, ministry, and culture. I am your host, Derek J. Murphy, and I'm so glad to have you with me today. Before we get to anything else, let's have a quick praise report. Back to episode 8, we spoke with attorney Jasmine Crockett, who caught our attention by helping those who had been arrested during a protest in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. But at the same time, she was running a campaign for the Texas State House of Representatives for District 100. And I am proud to announce to the Building People audience that she was elected as the presumptive nominee for the State House of Representatives. She beat the incumbent Lorraine Birabil, and she will be serving in Austin representing those in the District 100 of the Dallas-Fort Worth area. We are so proud to have had the chance to talk with her and to understand her positions, understand her platform, and what she plans to do in Austin while she is there. So salute to you, Jasmine Crockett. Building People is proud to be part of the freedomradio.com family, and I am so grateful for all of you that are listening through that platform. If you are listening through freedomradio.com, I invite you to reach out to me at I am Derek J. Murphy across all social media platforms, and let me know what you think about the show. Let me know what you're enjoying, and even if you have any suggestions about what you would like to hear, all of that is welcome. If you listen to this through Apple Podcast, I invite you to leave a review, rate us, and let the platform know what you think about our show. It allows for other people to discover this podcast and discover this show so that they can enjoy what you've been enjoying as well. And regardless of where you're listening to this, I invite you to interact with us. Let us know what you think about the show. Let us know what you think about our guests and what you would like to see in future episodes. All of your feedback is valuable and welcome. So whether you're listening to this through a podcast medium or you're listening to this on Spotify or iHeartRadio, I invite you, share with us what you love, and we'll be sure to incorporate all of that in what we do. Building People family, I am excited for our guest today. Listen, I don't know this young lady very well personally, but every time I have been in her presence and she sits down at a piano and plays and sings the things that she does, my God, today, she is so gifted. And I am so excited to talk to her. I saw an opportunity and I seized it. So I asked her to be my guest this week. So glad to have you, Ms. Lakin Moore Westmoreland. Thank you so much for joining us this week.
Thank you for having me.
So the first question that we ask every guest is, what do you do to build people and why?
Okay, so what I do to build people is I use pretty much every single gift that I have, both musical and not, to empower, encourage, edify people, whether it is emotionally or mentally. I strive to just help somebody else be better in a way that I wish I would have had in my life.
So you say in the ways that you wish that you would have had. I'm interested in that statement because you seem, listen, one thing that I've noticed about you is that you have a personality that seems to be one that draws people in. And it seems that you have that type of support on top of your gift that one would seem that you would get all that you would need. So could you expound on that, on that part that you said that you wish that you would have?
I come from a very faith-oriented family, but there was things that I wish somebody would have told me as it related to being someone gifted. not only gifted, but somebody who dares to actually do it. I was pushed because I came from a bunch of gifted people who weren't pushed. And so what I didn't receive was the inner affirmation that you are great and you can do this.
Mm-hmm.
It's the push of someone saying, it doesn't matter what you feel like you can't do. We're all telling you that you can't.
Right. That makes a huge difference. And I understand what you mean by that, because, you know, people say all the time, you know, you just be confident. Well, sometimes as in our formative years, we have to be taught what to be confident in. And if you don't have those people to affirm in you what gifts are lying dormant or gifts that you're exploring, then you can totally miss what it is that you may be even destined to do. So I agree with that. I like that you said that.
It's not enough to just tell somebody that they can. You literally have to show them how to leap.
Yeah, how
to jump, how to go for it. Yeah.
Well, see, you are such a creative soul, you know, and I see that in the choices that you make vocally. You could take a simple song, and that first time you're gonna sing it straight through, but the second time and the third time you're gonna do some things that it's like, where did that come from? Where does that creative mojo come from for you?
My mom is an actual singer. Again, it's the greatness that could have been. She is who taught me how to approach a song, but literally I can take that and put it in every, I think, aspect of my life, maybe. I think it's two things. I'm only 29, but I have a very extensive musical palette. So for me, I've always honored what came before me, what people did before me, and especially when I do covers or even covering material like in church or something, I always want to give homage to the thing that was before I completely deconstruct it and do something else. Just because you want to, foundations are important. You know, yes. You got to know the rules to break them.
I'm writing that down.
Foundations are super important. And that's in entities, in things that you want to, you know, infrastructure you want to dismantle. Sometimes, like, you need to understand we see it right now in our current climate. There's things we have to trace the origin to in order to change it.
Right.
So I take that approach with music and life and being self-aware and everything. Like, why is this? Everything has a root. Why did this happen? And if I understand why it happened, then I can understand how to perfectly rearrange it and make it into something else.
That's good. I like that. You got to know the rules in order to break them. That's good. Because a lot of people just go and willy-nilly start doing stuff that doesn't really have any rhyme or reason. But if you, I like that. I like that.
It's good to not be a slave to structure, but at least know why it's there.
Yes. And see, now I'm going to take that in my classroom because I get a bunch of kids, and yes, they get on my nerve. I teach eighth grade. They get on my nerves with the questions. Why we got to do that? Listen, I got 55 minutes to get you this lesson. I don't really have a whole lot of time to deal with the why. But no, that's good. That's good. So in order to create something new and to give a new experience, you take the foundation and build upon it. So what is your foundation? When did you discover your singing gift? Were you classically trained, and as well as your gift to play piano?
Okay, my gift of singing started in my toddler years. Much like pretty much anybody, you know, like I said, my family was really strongly rooted in faith. So I grew up non-denominational, basically extra Pentecostal with no restrictions to do anything else. But, you know, you listen to the Greats Commission and Kirk Franklin and Fred Hammond and the walking, the Hawkins and the Winans, you know, all of them, the golden era of contemporary gospel music for us anyway. And then, you know, every R&B song from the 90s on back, funk, all of that kind of stuff. I've been singing ever since I can remember. I actually didn't sing really in public until I was like 9 or 10. But I was always singing at home. Every time they tried to get me to sing at church in those middle years, I would bust out crying as soon as the music would start playing. But at home, they couldn't shut me up. I started playing the keyboard at the age of 11. Mind you, all those other years, I used to bang on the keyboard. I actually have a pretty miraculous story as to how I started playing the keyboard, and I'm not sure if your platform is faith-based or not, but
it is.
What happened was I was at a family church, and there was just some inconsistencies with some of the ministers of music that they were having, and I was already tinkering around because I was singing. I started writing songs, so I ended up tinkering around on the keyboard for that. And I had already started just tinkering around just by ear. I would just match pitch with what I would sing in my head. And it came an opportunity, well, not an opportunity, but there was a need at the church for someone to play. And there was a minister there, they were a guest minister, and they asked if anybody wanted prayer, and I guess it was a faith move, but I went up and I was like, you know, would you pray for my hands? He prayed for my hands, and in 6 months, I was carrying full services at their church.
Wait a minute, 6 months?
Yes, in 6 months, I was fully, I only knew two songs when I asked. And I played those two songs for the youth praise team that we had. And it was just these two songs, this is what we went to if the musicians decided not to show up that day. And within 6 months, I was carrying full services at the church after that prayer service. So I've been playing ever since. Like it just became a thing where if I could hear it, I could play it.
See, and that's why I want to throw stuff at you. You just, my goodness. So my story is slightly parallel to yours. I didn't sing at home. I was made to sing. And and so, you know, I come from a musical family as well, my mother's side. And everybody on my was. One of the mothers was just convinced I was full of the Holy Ghost. No, Mama, I was scared. And in the same way, you know, I started playing and I learned one song, but it took a while for us to carry services, and we played behind our musician for a long time before we started carrying it ourselves. But to carry the weight of an entire service as an 11, 12 year old, that's a huge responsibility. And, you know, did you feel a lot of weight with that? I mean, or did you sense that, or did you understand that at that age?
Yes, it was extremely heavy. With shameless plug, I have a, I do everything. I think I have a blog called The Menstrual Mind, where I unpacked a lot of the weight that comes with being gifted that young with a lot of responsibility, trying to grow up and also be heavily gifted and wanting to be responsible for it and carrying a lot of weight that it really doesn't even need to be carried at that age. It actually caused me to have to take a long hiatus for like a year and 10 months. the year before last, 2018. Yeah, I recently just jumped back into music ministry last year once I got married. Because of the weight that started at 11 and 12 with that. So, yeah, it was heavy. It really was.
That's just such a huge responsibility to place on a young child. Because the flow of the service can be accelerated and it could be totally destroyed by the musician. And, you know, from a spiritual perspective, and, you know, a lot of people don't necessarily understand that. They consider what we do as minstrels or as musicians as, you know, you could just get anybody who can play to do it. That's not so.
Yeah.
Do you think that it caused you any sort of emotional damage or spiritual damage from having to carry that?
Yes and no. And here's why. I think if anything that can be taken to that can be taken and used to be something that's ascribed to the glory of God. I believe it was David that said, it was good that I went through so that you'd be able to, you know, glorify God because of what happened. I believe, yes, I did experience a lot of emotional and spiritual pain behind it. But I also know that it's the very thing that makes me able to walk in the capacity that I am now. So, yes, I believe it did some things, but it wasn't just for naught. I believe I'm better because of it. I believe I'm effective because of it. I can tell you, for me, like I said, my mom is the best. She didn't put any pressure on me. I put the pressure on myself. There were trips I didn't take because of me, because I felt weird about not being there. How are they going to sing if I'm not going to be there? Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't think about, these are things that you won't ever get back. These are experiences that children have that they'll never get back. And, you know, it was always a, are you sure? You sure you don't want to, you know? And it was I got to be there. It was me. And it was a lot of things that I internalized, and I was in, you know, once I got to be an adult, then I was able to unpack that and be like, I can't even blame my parent because they were trying. She was trying to make sure I was okay. But, you know, when you think you're doing something, when you're doing something not for the kingdom, but for the establishment or the institution of church or religion, you know, it'll get into you, and you'll internalize a lot of messages that whole ordeal will give to you before you're spiritually mature enough to realize this is not okay. You watch other people lay their whole everything on the line. And they're not, this is all that they have to hang their head on, and it hasn't been successful for them, but it's all that they know to teach you. And it's you that has to figure out, okay, this is not healthy and I shouldn't be doing it. They say millennials, they say, we'll do it. If this doesn't serve me, I quit. If this doesn't work, I put it up, you know. And I thank God that we're that way. We know what is structural and what is unnecessary.
Right.
And we move accordingly. So
from that, would you say that that's what brought you to the balance that you are able to do today? And I say that because you are not exclusively a, quote, church singer, gospel singer, inspirational singer. You really run the gamut of all sorts of genres. And you do it well, and you do it in such a way that in my opinion, it does honor God.
That's my whole thing. I have adopted a mission statement for myself, and it was like maybe a few months ago that I actually did, I guess, put put a scripture to it. And it basically is to be all things to all men. If God wants to show up and I'm at a lounge somewhere or a birthday party or something, I choose content and I choose music that speaks to people wherever they are. So if God wants, if he wants to manifest his glory in a club, I'll let it happen. Because I haven't done anything. That's where character comes from, you know. I haven't done anything that won't allow you to not receive what's happening right now. I think, and I, you call it balance, but I call it harmony, because I think when we get into using balance, it's like, you know, one thing is going to be robbed if the other thing isn't. And really, there, God is all about harmony. We look at the way that our systems are interwoven and how they work together, like the sky and the water and the moon and all of that kind of stuff. Not to get, you know, new age on anybody, because Jesus out of way. But we see how all the created things that he made. Let's bring it to the Bible. He created all things, and he did it with a word. And one thing didn't go lacking because he created something else.
Right.
And in the same likeness, just because I create one set of music doesn't mean it's going to undermine the sovereignty of God, the fact that he receives glory. As a matter of fact, I'll be able to do a lot more because I left the building for a second. I went into all the world and preached the gospel. Maybe I didn't say it in my song, but I was kind to you. My countenance when I sang this lyric was glorifying to God. So. Yeah. It made me realize that God can meet you wherever you are.
Yeah.
Wherever you are, in your heart or in your position in life or where your life is, he can meet you. And he'll do the same thing that he does on Sunday morning, wherever you happen to be.
Now, you know, like I know that's going to cause people hear that, or people witness that, and that causes some tension. Mm-hmm. How much pushback do you experience having that understanding of the harmony of what you do?
I don't even want to call it pushback, because I've been in spaces where I could go and minister somewhere, and people would add me on Facebook, and then they would say that they feel the exact same thing when they see a cover of a love song. And I think, I do believe that I have a grace for it, where some other artists may not. And I think it's because there's a level of compromise that some people feel like they have to do in order to do both. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm not well versed in what other people have to do in order to to pull up, you know, those kinds of emotions. But I do everything as unto the Lord. So, you know, if I'm singing about love, I'm singing about a love that has been ordained by God, that doesn't harm people, that isn't promoting something that would make him feel some type of way as the Lord. And so we talk about Song of Songs all the time. And that is when I have seen other people give other people pushback about it. I have to think about that. I have to refer to that. There's a whole group of songs that could rival 90s R&B. Song of Solomon, Song of Songs, you know, this man was talking about how much he loved this woman, and, you know, and vice versa. So you can't say that the Lord hasn't already covered that.
Right.
And so if there is pushback, I don't get it to my face. And my mommy said that that's none of my business. If it's not, if you don't at me, I won't know. but I find that a lot of ministers and pastors that have wives, they really gravitate to it. Like, there's been several apostles and stuff. It's like, you know, Me and my, I got tagged one time. She's like, me and my husband just slow danced to your Anita Baker cover. And I was just like, oh, they in the living room and they streamed a song on their TV and they're dancing around in their living room and their kids are like, y'all are gross. but in my mind, it touched me because that's been my whole thing. Pastors want to dance with their wives too, and they can't Hello. Do that to Mahalia Jackson. They can't. You know, Kirk Franklin is a stretch, but he won't get it done either.
Right.
It comes from a pure place, and if anything, I've had people change their mind about what they assumed about. So, you know, that's progress. I know everybody won't, you know, all the way and nothing else. You know, some people are very, very extreme. They're extremists. They have to be whatever path they were on, whatever God has called them to. They feel as if they have to, you know, not deal with secular stuff. And I understand that. I respect it. But usually those people don't say anything to me anyway, because my hair is orange. So.
Yeah. Well, so then you are able to navigate your gift in so many different spaces and in so many different ways. You touch a lot of lives. I'm sure that other singers gravitate to you, and I think it's that idea is what brought you to this interview today. You're starting you're beginning a new collective of singers called the Siblinghood Worship Collective, mm-hmm. Right?
Yes.
Tell us about that. What is that all about, and what is it that you are endeavoring to do with that collective?
Okay, the Siblinghood Worship Collective is, our mission is we're a group of sons and daughters forged by the Father to use our content creation and fine arts to move the current climate of the worship culture in our country, in America, in our area, from worship culture to kingdom culture. And by that we mean it's no secret that the current climate in our country has not only heightened what we already have known about the gospel industry or worship industry or whatever you want to call it, but we realize that there's a certain connotation that comes when you hear praise and worship, or when you hear certain styles of worship. There's some people that think that CCM, it belongs to a certain group of people, and gospel music belongs to a certain ethnic group or ethnicity. And that if you love one and hate the you gotta love one and hate the other.
Right.
If you do one, you're turning your back on one thing. You know, if you're doing it this way, it's too emotional. If you're doing it this way, it's not emotional enough. Mm. And we are all very, very close to the point of being siblings. We're not naturally connected. Well, some of us are, because it's two couples. I and my husband are apart, and there's another married couple in the group. And it's really not a group. That's the thing. Sometimes we may do things together to assist each other with things, but it's a platform, really. The thing is a platform for all of us who are in ministry. But we do more than that. Some of us are bloggers. Some of us have critical conversations, such as your podcast. So you may see things like that there. And all of it, it's a hodgepodge of a million things, but all of it is to show people that you don't have to be monolithic in your expression and worship. There's people who can't sing a lick, but they write poetry. There's people who can't, you know, maybe they can't blend in with the praise team, but they can do spoken word. Some people paint while people are singing and doing those kinds of things. And if you can find your hands to do anything that glorifies God, I think that you should do it if in expressing yourself. Not everybody can sing. Not everybody can write a song. Not everybody can do what we have pigeonholed as worship as it relates to what the rules say we should do. The status quo of worship is, if you're of this, you know, this persuasion, you can only do X, Y, and Z. Songs that have a lot of spiritual depth or scriptural basis don't just belong to one group of people or one style of music. And it doesn't matter how many times you repeat it, or if you do a sonnet or a movement like Richard Smallwood, it doesn't matter as long as God is being glorified. And so our whole thing is helping people cultivate who they are in identity, in their identity, as to who God has created them to be. We, our foundation is on Ephesians, Ephesians 5 and 1. Oh, 1 and 5, yes, Ephesians 1 and 5. And it's basically talking about how God has adopted us, and we have his identity. We're in his family. And whatever he says that we are, or whoever he says that we are, we can rest in that because he adopted us to be a part of his family. And whatever he has given us as his DNA for us is exactly all we have to be. And it doesn't look just one way, and it doesn't sound just one way, and it doesn't move or walk just one way, but it does look like God.
Well, I love that, because I notice in the industry of gospel music, there seems to be a singular focus, and everybody sort of sounds the same. There is no real distinction anymore. Because back in the day, I believe that the 90s was really the golden era of Black gospel music. Mm-hmm. And so when you could have on the same stage, you know, a Kirk Franklin, a Fred Hammond, a Hezekiah Walker, a John P. Key, mm-hmm. all singing glory to God, but their styles are completely
different.
Mm-hmm. Completely different. And now it seems as if today you have to sound a certain way in order to get the support from the industry. Yeah. And I think what you're putting together is allowing people to really decide for themselves, this is what I need to do, and this is how I need to sound, and have the support for it. Like you said at the top of the interview, having what we didn't have before. So what do you expect will be the result of, you know, 5 years from now, as this collective grows and matures? What do you see would be the result of it in, say, 5 years?
Okay. I see each member of the collective. I see each member, first and foremost, it grew out of our need to have a platform of support for amongst ourselves, so that we could support other people, even if it was just say, hey, you could do this too. You can start something crazy that nobody has ever thought about doing before, or that people don't do in your area. For us, it's what we've seen other people do in other communities, not just Black communities, but like just in other communities where we pulled all of our efforts together to show that it doesn't have to look the same. You can all be close. You can all support each other and be different. So in 5 years from now, I see not only each person further whatever it is that they're good at, all the things that they're good at, but also to see more of what we do. We don't want it to be we started this and that's it. I want to see other people get in their city or whatever, because we're spread out amongst the state. We're in Arkansas, but I want to see other people pop up and get together and write songs and swap ideas and, you know, expose other people to things that they may have not, you know, they have always connected to, but they didn't think they could do because they didn't see anybody doing it. So in 5 years, I want the